From the studios of the RPH Network in Sydney, welcome to another edition of AbleQuest, where we examine assistive technologies and related subjects for people living with disabilities. I'm Nikki Lindemann, and this is AbleQuest. And on today's show, we hope to shine some light into the world of speech pathologists, what they do, how they do it, and what we can learn from them. Recently, I interviewed speech pathologist Erica Ortega, who works for a large Sydney-based cerebral palsy organisation which seeks to enhance the lives of people living with cerebral palsy and enable their full participation in the community. Speech pathologists have the specialised knowledge and experience needed to identify communication difficulties and to provide people with the help that they need to build critical language and literacy skills. Erica Ortega completed her 2 degrees at Macquarie University, first a Bachelor of Science, followed by a Master's in Speech and Language Pathology in 2003. She has worked for Cerebral Palsy Alliance, which some of our listeners may remember as being the Spastic Centre, since April this year. Her previous experience was gained through working in acute hospitals, in nursing homes, private clinics, special and mainstream schools, community health clinics, and with children in the UK, and working in adult community health. She has also lectured to allied health assistant students at community colleges. Her special interest in the sphere of speech pathology is in relation to working with people with disabilities, and she is best placed to continue and develop this interest through working with people living with CP at the CP Alliance. She feels that she has much to offer the empowerment of people with disabilities to find new independence through better communication and thereby influence their quality of life. In addition, she enjoys working with preschool-aged children. In the time we have available on this program, we can only scratch the surface of what speech pathologists do. However, we hope that we can provide an insight which will answer some basic questions. The interview with Erica follows. So, Erica, what's the difference, would you say, between a speech therapist and a speech pathologist?
A speech pathologist is what we used to be called, but now we're professionally known as speech pathologists, so it's actually what our title is. So they're the same thing, but speech therapist would be the more commonly known term.
So can you explain to us then some of the specific types of communication difficulties people experience that speech pathology can help with?
Well, one of the areas that speech pathologists can help people with is voice. So sometimes people have problems with their voice. It's either not loud enough or it's too loud, or they might lose their voice often. So we can help people to train their voice so they can use it in a more effective way without damaging it. And other areas that we help with are understanding language. So some people can speak well but may not really understand what they're hearing. Mm-hmm. Whereas others people might understand everything they're hearing but may not be able to use it effectively to communicate their message across.
And those sorts of difficulties arise through presumably injury or disability of some kind?
Yes, they can, yeah. But you can also have these issues as a developmental problem. So some children, for example, might have difficulty with these areas and they may not have a diagnosis as such.
Mm-hmm. And just for my own interest, because I have some past history with looking after cerebral palsy sufferers, can you give us any inside info on how you help people with cerebral palsy?
People with cerebral palsy, they can have varying degrees of intellectual disability as well.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the people with cerebral palsy have no problem intellectually, but they might have difficulty actually speaking because of their muscle coordination difficulties.
Yeah.
So we might find a way for them to be able to express themselves, and there are many different ways of doing that these days, including computer technology.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one way. We can also help to improve their understanding in areas, or perhaps depending on how much they've been exposed to reading and writing, we can also assist with helping them learn to read and write more clearly.
With the assistance of communication devices?
Yes, usually for communication devices. Mm-hmm. So if they have a communication device and they need to use sentences to activate the device, basically, they might not know a basic sentence structure, so we could teach them that so they can use it effectively.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, we've heard very cute story about a disabled boy whose name was Smith. And apparently he couldn't say that properly. It always came out apparently as MIFFS, M-I-F-F-S, S.
Yeah.
His mother was apparently really thrilled the day he finally came out with the word correctly. Do you have that kind of a story to share with us? Something similar to that?
Yeah, so a client that I've worked with in the past did have cerebral palsy and he was unable to communicate verbally, but he'd been living in a nursing home because his parents got too old, I guess, to look after him.
Mm-hmm.
So he moved into our service and I was asked to see him because he was obviously in a new environment, nobody knew him, and they were having a lot of trouble communicating with him.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went to see him, I was, through assessing him, I was able to realise that he had very good understanding, but it was just the verbal that he could not communicate. So we were able to find a device that was suited to him, a communication device. And with that, it's amazing that he uses a switch on his foot plate of his wheelchair.
Yeah.
And he uses that to write emails, to access Skype so he can say hello to his family and friends. So it's really opened up the world to him, and he's on Twitter now and very independent. And it was great for him. He didn't have any way of being able to do all this previously.
Fantastic. Isn't that wonderful? That's lovely. Now, shifting our focus a little bit today, most of us have been in the situation of talking with someone who has a stammer or a stutter. It's hard not to want to finish their sentences. It's very tempting to do so, and we feel embarrassed and saddened for them. Is stuttering something that speech pathologists can help with?
Absolutely. Stuttering is definitely one of our areas. And, yeah, it is difficult, I think, when you come across someone who's stuttering because, like you said, you do want to finish their sentences. I guess, you know, as speech pathologists, we would recommend not to do that, no matter how tempted you are, especially if it's a child.
Yeah.
Because by correcting them, you kind of increasing that anxiety a little bit all the time, you're finishing off their sentences,
yeah,
which can make it worse. So often we just say to people, you know, just make sure you keep looking at the person, you know, let them know you're still interested in what they're saying, let them finish it off.
Yeah.
For adults, you know, you could ask them, do you mind if I finish off your sentences?
Yeah.
Because obviously they've probably had it since they were children.
Yes.
But, yeah, you can ask adults. Yeah, but often we just say, let them speak. It would be frustrating to have someone finish your sentences all the time.
Absolutely. And what sort of interventions can the speech pathologists undertake to help with stuttering? Can you give us an example of a couple of things you do in that circumstance?
Yeah, there are lots of different programs depending on your age.
Mm-hmm.
So what you would do with a child would be very different to what you do with an adult.
Yeah.
So with children, there is a program that is used called the Lidcombe program, where you work directly on the speech itself.
Mm-hmm.
So you might praise them, for example, when they say a sentence that doesn't have any stuttering in it.
Yeah.
And you might ignore the sentences that do, and kind of, it's that positive reinforcement, and that helps.
Mm-hmm. And with adults?
As an adult, you might do things like modify the way they speak a little bit so they still sound very natural, but you might, for example, one thing we might say to a client is try and keep your voice going all the time, so it's like a motor that's constantly running.
Yeah.
Almost. So just modifying your voice very slightly can have really good effects, but I mean, it depends on the client and what works for them, because what works for one person doesn't always work for another.
Of course, and I'm sure many of our listeners, and probably you've seen the recent film, The King's Speech.
Yeah.
Some of those techniques shown in the movie that Geoffrey Rush, demonstrated, would they be the kinds of interventions you might use? Something similar to those? Or is it completely, is it fantasy?
It's come a long way since then.
Yeah.
Well, we definitely wouldn't have people rolling on the floor and all that kind of thing.
It was kind of amazing, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, but with the singing part of it, that's still something that we kind of incorporate into stuttering. So like, as I was saying, by modifying your voice a little bit and keeping your motor running, as I was saying, it's kind of like that singing,
mm-hmm,
like your voice is still going, continues to flow, I should say. So I guess we do still use parts of it, but it's quite different from what you see in the film.
Yes, I thought you might say that. And you've also answered another question I was going to put to you about singing. It's said that singing helps stutterers, obviously. It's true.
Well, it helps too. Like I said, the concept of it helps. So because speech is so closely linked to stuttering. Anything you do to change your speech will affect the stuttering. So if you speak in a foreign accent, you won't stutter.
Oh, really?
Generally, yeah. Or if you speak in a funny voice, you won't stutter either. So sometimes you work with children that are speaking in funny voices or a funny accent.
Oh, my God, that's interesting.
And they've kind of picked up that if they do that, they speak smoothly.
That's interesting. Yeah. So how does stuttering develop? Is it genetic or are there certain factors that can trigger it?
Yeah, they're not actually sure, really. They know that it's something neurological.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it hasn't been said that there is a genetic link, but having said that, you do see it run in families.
All right.
So, yeah, it's hard to know at the moment. I think a bit more research is needed into that.
Yeah, sounds like it. So, Erica, whilst realising, of course, that you're not an expert in this field, some of our audience are in the demographic that where strokes could be a risk. How would you characterise the role of exercise in preventing a stroke so you wouldn't perhaps have to use the services of a speech pathologist?
Well, exercise is very important. I mean, there are different kinds of strokes, and some can be caused by blockages in your arteries, so your veins.
Mm-hmm.
So that tends to happen if you're not as fit or have high cholesterol. That can make the possibility of having a stroke much higher. So staying within a healthy weight range is very important to prevent strokes, because they can be quite devastating
yes.
in regards to your communication skills and being able to be as independent as you are.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, very important message. Erica, that's it for the interview today. Thank you so much for being on AbleQuest, and we look forward to being in touch with you again.
Great, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
One of the most important areas a speech pathologist can support people with disabilities is with the swallowing difficulties experienced by most people affected by different forms of cerebral palsy. CP can affect a person's ability to finely coordinate the muscles around the mouth and tongue that are needed for speech. The respiratory coordination that is needed to support speech can also be affected. E.g., some people may sound breathy when they speak. Some children with cerebral palsy may not be able to produce any sounds. Others may be able to produce sounds, but have difficulty controlling their movement enough to produce speech that is clear and understood by others. And here is a sobering statistic. 1 in 5 children with cerebral palsy cannot speak. For those with restricted speech, an augmentative or alternative communication system may assist. Communication board or a book, gesture or sign language, or an electronic voice output device. For some people suffering with cerebral palsy, ataxia can also affect speech and swallowing. When ataxia affects speech, it is sometimes called scanning speech. The person uses a monotone voice with a breathy sound. Sometimes there is also an unusual acceleration or pauses between their syllables. Ataxic cerebral palsy is the least common form of cerebral palsy. That brings this edition of AbleQuest to a close. Thank you for listening, and I hope you've enjoyed what you've heard, and perhaps it's brought some clarity around a very complex subject. On RPH Australia, this is Nikki Lindemann.